From the KCSB FM studio in Santa Barbara, welcome to Radio Causeway. I'm Katrina.
And I'm Tim. This is your weekly showcase bringing you timely interviews and bridging your world of music. For the terminally ill and those suffering irreversible and intolerable medical circumstances, the choice to end their life has been a topic that has come under considerable debate and controversy. Joining us today via telephone to discuss the issue is Final Exit Network board member, Dr. Frank Cavanaugh.
And we'll have the Mullet Strange News and Yeah Free Music a little later in the show. Stay with us.
Good morning. You're on KCSB FM 91.9 in Santa Barbara and streaming live at kcsb.org. This is Radio Causeway. I'm Tim.
And I'm Katrina.
Well, I hope everyone had a great Independence Day yesterday. Today, we got a great show lined up for you. The nonprofit organization Final Exit Network is on a mission to raise awareness and help develop the conversation around supporting the human right to a death with dignity. Dr. Frank Cavanaugh, board member of Final Exit Network, is on the phone to help us explore the issue. Dr. Cavanaugh, welcome to Radio Causeway.
Good morning, Katrina and Tim. Nice to be with you this morning, and thank you for bringing this issue to your listeners.
Hey, our pleasure. I want to start off with, for folks that don't know about Final Exit Network, can you explain just exactly what the organization is?
Sure. We are an organization composed of all volunteers, about 3,000 across the United States. We have no office, no staff. We're principally older people, and we believe that mentally competent people who are suffering from an irreversible illness or from unbearable suffering have the right to end their life and the right to choose the timing and the method and the help and the companion, free of any restrictions, no matter how well-intentioned. And we think that will become the ultimate human right of the 21st century, just as we've gone through women's rights and civil rights and voters' rights and all of those. We think the right to die with dignity will become the right of the 21st century. It's important to say that we do not encourage anybody to end their life. We don't provide the means for anybody to do that, and we don't provide any physical assistance. What we do is carefully evaluate them and then provide them with information and counseling if they check out to find that their condition medically warrants that kind of an act.
Well, before we get in too much further, I wanted to mention, I think when talking about the right to die, assisted suicide, the first name that people think of is Dr. Jack Kevorkian, who recently had passed away. Can you talk about the work that Dr. Kevorkian did? He was at times a controversial figure, but can you talk about what he has meant to this movement in general?
Well, I think when the book is ultimately written on the right to die with dignity, that Dr. Kevorkian will be a very important chapter in that book. He was a man who had great humanity for his fellow man. He was a person who risked his life to help people who were suffering. He was certainly, as you mentioned, controversial. He was sometimes argumentative. He was intractable. He was often a character when he appeared in court, so that people have a variety of feelings about him. But no question that he helped to put the issue on the front burner of dialogue, and I think will be looked back in time respectfully for the increased public awareness that he brought to people who were suffering unbearably and in providing a means for them to be able to help themselves. You know, he was, interestingly, in all of his years where he merely provided the means for people to end their life, he was successfully defended repeatedly in court. Mm-hmm. And it was only at the end where he was really so desperate to get the issue before the United States Supreme Court that he actually injected a person And, of course, that was then taking another person's life.
Right.
And he went to court representing himself, which is never a good idea, and then went to prison for it and served 8 years in prison, came out, and just died a couple of months ago at the age of 83, I think.
Dr. Kavanaugh, as you've mentioned, this is a very serious topic, and it's something that I feel like is a conversation that we all need to be having. I'm wondering what prompted you to take on this work?
Well, I retired out of the George Washington University Medical Center, where I had been on the faculty there for 23 years. And I became acutely aware of what a wonderful job organized medicine did in intervening in people's lives, in improving their condition, in curing disease where that was possible to cure. But I also became aware that we were kind of like the medical Marines. When we could win the battle, we fought like hell. But when we couldn't win it, we tended to walk away from the patient at perhaps the most critical time of their life.
Mm.
And the doctors were well-trained in saving lives and not necessarily very well-trained at the end of a person's life in bringing the end of their life to a reasonable, painless kind of end. You know, too often we all hope that we die in our beds, and about 80% of us die in hospitals with things plugged into every orifice in our body and in a condition that we never intended to be in and certainly never intended to be there and to die in that way. So seeing what miracles we could do and then seeing what a poor job we did at the end said that maybe in my retirement years this is something that I want to devote myself to. It's a kind of a greater discussion amongst the public and also then to providing information and counseling and support to people who are in this situation so that they can be helped.
I also am interested in how you interact with hospice workers and also physicians in this type of setting.
Sure. We do think that hospice is the greatest organization in the world. Most people who become involved with hospice do so in the last 10 days to 2 weeks of their life.
Yes.
And that is an absolute shame. People should be involved with hospice at the earliest opportunity when they know that they're in a terminal situation. Now, the word terminal is key because in order to be helped by hospice and in order to be helped by Medicare, a doctor must find that you are within the last 6 months of your life. So that if I am not in the last 6 months of my life, but I am a person who suffers from ALS, from Huntington's disease, from advanced multiple sclerosis, metastatic cancer, all of those kinds of things, hospice really can't help me. And therefore, I'm stuck. Now, there are three states in the United States, Oregon, Washington, Montana, who do allow for physicians to aid a person in hastening the end of their life by providing them with the medication to do so. But that's only three states, and in every other state, including California, if you're in that situation, you can't be helped by a doctor. So those are the people that we try and help. And we're really unique in all the organizations that work in the Death with Dignity movement in that we will help not only people who are terminal, but also people who are simply irreversibly ill and can no longer bear what they're going through.
If you're just tuning in, we are on the phone with Dr. Frank Kavanaugh, board member of Final Exit Network. For the terminally ill and those suffering irreversible and intolerable medical circumstances, the choice to end their life has been a topic that has come under considerable debate and controversy. We're going to be back with more on the topic with Dr. Frank Kavanaugh of Final Exit Network. But first, we have a music break. The song we have is new music from Lockerbie. The track is Kiar. You're on Radio Causeway.
Hi, this is Ronnie from Years Around the Sun, and you are listening to Radio Causeway on KCSB 91.9, Santa Barbara.
Welcome back to Radio Causeway. I'm Tim.
And I'm Katrina.
Just heard new music from Lockerbie. The nonprofit organization Final Exit Network is on a mission to raise awareness and help develop the conversation around supporting the human right to a death with dignity. Dr. Frank Cavanaugh, board member of Final Exit Network, is on the phone with us to explore this issue. Dr. Cavanaugh, I wanted to ask you about some of the things that have caused more of the controversy, it seems like, is just the defining of the terms. Currently, there's a court case in the Northern District of Georgia, the U.S. District Court, Schindler versus Deal, a civil case. Can you talk a little bit about the civil case and how it applies to the First Amendment and the freedom of speech?
Sure. There are, Tim, probably 36, 38 states who have laws somehow referring to it being a crime to assist in a suicide. What suicide, first of all, is a difficult word because it has a lot of baggage with it. It applies to somebody who is psychotic, not in their right mind, severely clinically depressed, any of those kinds of things. And those are not the kind of people that we try and support. We do rather support people who are rational and mentally competent. But the laws are very vague as to what assist means, and what we do is provide people with, once they've made it through our medical review and our psychological review, is with information and counseling. We stop short of providing them any means to end their life or physically assisting them in any way, so that we think what we do is protected by our First Amendment right of free speech. And the case you mentioned, we've been in two criminal trials, one in Arizona, where none of the people charged went to jail, and several of them were found not guilty. Also in the state of Georgia, with a similar situation that has yet to come to trial, but we have a motion before the Georgia Supreme Court, and they've agreed to hear the motion at present, which says that what we do is protected by the First Amendment right of free speech. And if they agree with that, then the prosecutors in that case will have to prove that we provided the person with the means and we physically assisted them in some way. Otherwise, they're not going to get a conviction.
Off mic, we were talking about the conversations that families, individuals might or might not be having about end of life and the decisions. Can you talk about what Final Exit Network is advocating for in terms of these conversations?
Sure. If we could communicate nothing more to your audience today than for each of the people who are listening to take some time and think about what it is that they would or wouldn't want at the end of their life. Do they want every possible effort taken to keep them alive, no matter what their condition? How do they feel about feeding tubes, ventilators, all of those kinds of things? Not important for us to suggest what they should decide, but for people to think through for themselves what it is that they would and would not want at the end of their life. And then to sit down with the members of the family, the loved ones, and have a discussion about that and share with them what it is that you want and don't want at the end of your life. Having done that, take it one step further and draw up a living will, which spells those things out, and establish a durable health care power of attorney of someone to speak for you if you can't speak for yourself in some situation. And that will go a long way to making sure that at the end of life, that everybody's on the same page. Because too often the person is, in the hospital with a feeding tube and a ventilator, and the family stands around the bed and argues about what it is that they would or would have not wanted at the end of their life. Now, you can say, okay, well, I'm a young person, I'm a student out here, I'll think about those things at the end of my life. But I would just suggest that, you could step off the curb and be hit by a truck tomorrow and be in that situation. And we have the great cases of Karen Ann Quinlan, of Terry Schiavo, who were people who were in this condition in their 20s, and it went on through the courts for ages and ages of arguments about, should they be allowed to die or should they not be allowed to die. So think about it, share it with the ones you love, put it down in writing, make sure that everybody's on the same page about what you want.
Dr. Kavanaugh, the resources that you provide, are they focused mainly toward the individual going through the end-of-life transition, or are you able to direct family members to grief counselors as well?
Oh, yes. I mean, we will, when people initially come in contact with us, we try and pay very careful attention to suicide prevention. If it is a situation where somebody is clinically depressed and they might be able to be helped by medication or by counseling, so that those people are then provided to those resources. If through the contact and through the following medical records and so forth, it's established that, yes, the medical records demonstrate that they are not going to get any better, and they've demonstrated the suffering that they're going through, then we'll provide them with the information and the counseling. But we're very careful to screen out people who are not mentally competent or not rational or might be helped in other ways.
I wanted to ask, their Final Exit Network isn't the only Right to Die group out there. What sets Final Exit Network apart from other organizations?
Well, we are unique, and let me just start by saying that there is a World Federation of Right to Die societies, and there are some 45 groups around the world in 24 different countries, I think, that are much like what we do, that either provide support or try and work on changing the laws about end-of-life care. But our uniqueness is that in order for us to help you, you don't have to be terminal. Again, if you're simply irreversible, if you have ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, Huntington's, those kinds of things, mm-hmm. where you're not going to get any better, but you're not necessarily within the last 6 months of your life, then we're the only organization that will help you. And that's why we're on the edge of testing the laws. We've been in existence since 2004, and we knew when we started this that we were going to wind up in court. And really, while we didn't look forward to the legal bills, we looked forward to establishing the precedent that we hope we're establishing in the right to provide information and counseling to people who need that information.
I'm also interested in knowing about your counselors, the people who work in the field with the individuals going through this transition and also the families. This work can be really stressful to, you know, the person who's in the caregiver situation. And I'm wondering if you provide some sort of resources to your counselors, things like yoga or massage or acupuncture, things to help manage stress.
Well, if somebody came to us just with a stressful situation that could be helped by the management of stress, then we would certainly suggest they go that route. The kinds of people that we help have a physically irreversible thing and the kinds of diseases that I've talked about before. But when people come to us, they have to submit an essay of their situation briefly as best they can. They have to submit a copy of their medical records. A panel of three physicians and a psychologist then review those records and say, is this irreversible, and does this person appear to be mentally competent and rational? And if they do, then one of our trained exit guides will go anywhere in the country and meet with them. And if in that meeting all of those factors are borne out and it appears to be a medically warranted situation, then they will provide them with the information and counseling mm-hmm. and support that they desire. In some cases, that's a whole family situation, mm-hmm. and the whole family is involved. But in other cases, Katrina, people feel that if they told their family member that they were going to hasten the end of their life, that there might be some action taken to stop them, and yes. that they might be, you know, hospitalized for psychiatric observation, any of those kinds of things. So while some people that we're with end their life in a family setting, very often as well, the family is not present or the family may not be aware of their decision because those conversations were never held. And then we take it a step further and we say, if you're in that situation and you want us to be there with you when you end your life, then we will do that because we don't think that anybody should have to die alone. So yes. essentially, we'll be there with you to hold your hand in that process. And, of course, that's where much of the legal risk comes. But, great majority of people who do this, and over the years we've perhaps been involved with maybe 250, 300 cases across the country. It's surprising how most people do not want to leave notes or leave information for the public that this is what I did and why. And that's all related to the stigma that relates to suicide and, mm-hmm. and ending your life and all of that. They simply want it to be known that, well, we knew they were sick and they just simply passed away in their chair or in their bed.
Well, I've got a question that would relate to that. How does it work with insurance? So do insurance companies act a certain way towards these assisted suicides actually, I'm not exactly sure how it works for those individuals.
Sure. I can answer you in a generality. It does bear, when you talk about around the United States, checking with lawyers in a particular area, but the general rule is that if you have had a life insurance policy for a period of 2 years, and then after that two-year period, you choose to hasten the end of your life, the insurance policy still pays off. What they guard against is somebody who says, okay, I'm at that stage, I'm going to end my life, I better run out and get an insurance policy before I do. That'll take care of my family. So insurance companies are very careful that to put that big time window with that. But generally, if you've had it for more than 2 years, it's going to pay off.
Well, I was curious, do we know what the general views of the public is? We've got, three states that allow for assisted suicides in certain cases.
Sure.
But do we know exactly what the view is across the nation?
Yeah, pretty well. The polls that have been conducted have been very consistent. There is the most recent one was in January of this year, 2011. It was a Harris poll, and it asked the question, do you believe that people who are terminally ill or irreversibly ill have the right to hasten the end of their life? And in that poll, 70% of the people said yes. Only 17% said no, and the remainder said, well, I'm not sure. And that's been consistent with polls that were done the year before by CNN. There was one by CBS as well. But they all come into that 70% agreement. Now, of the people who are opposed, most of them are opposed for religious reasons, of believing that no one has the right to take their own life except their God, if you will. And largely, that's the Roman Catholic Church. And we have many Catholics who come to us. We have many Christian people who come to us. And when we have that conversation about their religion, we ask them, you know, how do you feel about that and what is your belief? And invariably they say, I don't think that my God would want me to suffer in this way. So I'm comfortable both with the decision to hasten the end of my life and also with my understanding of my God. And we don't believe that that's a decision that anybody makes for anybody else. So anybody who has that religious view, I say absolutely that is your right. That is your personal view. Please allow me to have my personal view as well.
What kind of training do you provide to your counselors who go out into the community and work with these people facing this transition, this life event?
Mostly they go through training by the medical doctors and the psychologist, often for a period of a week where they are conditioned to the sensitivities of that person, what to ask, what to try and bring out to make sure that they're rational, to make sure that they're competent, to make sure that they're very firm about their decision. So they're asked over and over again and even asked to sign papers after all of that happens, that, yes, this is my decision to hasten the end of my life and so forth. And then the remainder of the counseling is simply the various options for ending the end of your life and some of the cautions and to make sure that is a peaceful and painless process, you know, because historically we've had people who would squirrel away pills from different doctors and that was their suicide kit should they need it or something, or you know, they would order drugs from Mexico and not be sure what they were getting. Okay. And sometimes in trying to take those, they would regurgitate them in the middle of the process and wind up in worse shape than they were in before. So the counseling of those various procedures, you know, some are as simple as just stopping food and hydration for 14 days. If that's tempered a bit, that will bring an end to a person's life as well. But there are methods today that will that are peaceful, that are painless, and that will allow you to pass in a matter of only a few seconds.
Dr. Kavanaugh, before we let you go, where can people go to find out more information?
Well, if you go to our those who are on the web, finalexitnetwork.org, Final Exit Network, all one word, and you'll see there pretty much all of our history and what we do and the court cases we're in and all of that sort of thing. And for any of those folks who are lucky enough to be computer-free, you can reach us by calling 866-654-9156. And that's an answering service. Somebody will take your inquiry and call you back and take you the proper route of whether it's an issue of suicide prevention or possibly your medical condition warrants your being supported by our organization. And we would love to have people join the organization, not just as an insurance policy for the end of your life, but if you believe in this cause and think it's a human rights cause, then, you know, like you would support or join the ACLU or American Cancer Society or anybody else, join Final Exit Network.
The nonprofit organization Final Exit Network is on a mission to raise awareness and help develop the conversation around supporting the human right to a death with dignity. We've been joined by Dr. Frank Kavanaugh, board member of Final Exit Network. It's been a great conversation. Thanks so much for taking the time today.
Jim and Katrina, thank you, and have a wonderful rest of the day.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
All right, so we've got a track right now. We'll take a quick music break. We got a song from At the Drive-In off their album In Casino Out. The track is Hourglass. You're on Radio Causeway.
Sound is a murderer.
Yes, this is Molten Holton Ranza Clint for the Ritz Sound. The sound that goes around, cruising all up and down the highways and byways, under the tunnels and over the flyways. Taking a little special trip today down a little something called the Radio Causeway. Sounds that lead the way each and every Tuesday with your boss DJs. Broadcasting from your number one station, your station from creation, 91.9 KCSP FM.
Welcome back to Radio Causeway. I'm Tim.
And I'm Katrina.
Just heard a track from At the Drive-In, Hourglass, off their In Casino Out release.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
It is time for the Mullet Strange News.
It's Mullet Strange News time. Get us kicked off. Hope you all enjoyed Independence Day holiday yesterday.
Yeah. Yay.
Yeah. Well, what activities do you think of when thinking about Independence Day?
Fireworks.
Fireworks.
Water sports.
Of course.
Barbecuing.
Barbecuing, yeah. Well, for many, Independence Day marks the annual Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest in Coney Island, New York.
Okay.
Yeah. Yesterday's contest featured a repeat performance from the now five-time champion, Joey Jaws Chestnut. He was able to put down 62 hot dogs in a 10-minute period.
Wow.
Oh, good grief.
Just wow.
It's a sight to be seen, for sure. Former world record holder Takeru Kobayashi was not present, but he was involved in a hot dog eating contest of his own.
there are, you know, multiple hot dog eating contests.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Well, they put together, due to a contract dispute with Major League Eating, Kobayashi's been kept out of the Nathan's annual contest for a few years now.
That's just strange to me that there's a
Major League
Eating contest. Yes. Okay.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, yesterday, Kobayashi posted up at 235th Rooftop Bar a few miles from Coney Island and slammed 69 hot dogs at the same time as Joey Chestnut, 69 hot dogs being an unofficial world record. Joey Chestnut currently holds the official world record mark at 68 hot dogs. Another interesting.
Impressive.
it's impressive for sure, and and even more so. Kobayashi's not a very large man, but he weighed in pre-event at 140 pounds. Post-event, he weighed in 158 pounds.
Holy cow!
Indeed, indeed.
Now it's your turn.
What do you got over there?
I have turtles. So mechanical issues, crew changes, plane being cleaned. These are words we hear all too often in today's age of air travel. Turtles on the runway? Not so common, unless you're at JFK. Jamaica Bay, surrounding John F. Kennedy Airport, is home to the common turtle species diamondback terrapin. The turtles, weighing in at 2 to 3 pounds and measuring about 8 inches long,
yes,
regularly emerge from the bay during the end of June and the beginning of July to lay their eggs on the sandy strip of beach surrounding a runway that juts out into the water.
No kidding!
Yeah.
Well, around 8:30 a.m. on Wednesday, American Eagle flight crews reported 3 turtles on the tarmac.
Uh-oh.
Delta followed suit shortly thereafter. The invasion, which unfolded slowly, according to airport officials, culminated with a total of 78 terrapins being relocated by airport crews.
Warning! Warning!
The Associated Press reports Port Authority of New York and New Jersey spokesman John Kelly said airport crews gathered up the turtles in about 35 minutes. Traffic was diverted to other runways, creating delays of about an hour and a half.
Ooh.
So I guess some reasons for delay are better, or at least slightly more interesting than others.
That's most definite.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so much fun.
How much do I owe you?
Half of nothing.
You mean it's free?
You feeling the love?
It's time for our Yeah! Free Music Pick of the Week, where we find music that has been made available for free and legal use in podcasts and downloads, and make it available for you at radiocausway.org. This week, we've got a band out of Copenhagen, Denmark. The band is called My Bubba and Me. The track is Satisfied Mind off the album How It's Done in Italy. You're on Radio Causeway.
Someone say
How much do I owe you?
Half of nothing.
You mean it's free?
You feeling the love?
Welcome back to Radio Causeway. I'm Tim.
And I'm Katrina.
That was our free music pick of the week, where we find music that's available for free and legal download and use in podcasts, make it available for you at radiocauseway.org. That track was from My Bubba and Me off the album How It's Done in Italy. The track was Satisfied Mind. You can find the entire album available on radiocauseway.org. What do we got coming up next?
We have a brand new track from Junior Boys off their It's All True EP, and the song is A Truly Happy Ending, the Diamond Rings remix.
You're on Radio Causeway.
Hey, this is Taz Samuelson from Midnight Surfer, and you are listening to Radio Causeway on KCSB FM 91.9, Santa Barbara.
Welcome back to Radio Causeway. I'm Tim.
And I'm Katrina.
You just heard a set of music, finished it up with new music from Best Coast with the song Gone Again off the Adult Swim singles album 2011. Before that was new music from Panda Bear off the album Tomboy, the song Surfer's Hymn.
We also had a track from Junior Boys off their It's All True EP. The name of the track is A Truly Happy Ending. It's the Diamond Rings remix. You can find that on their Domino label. If you want to catch any of the show or interview, find us on kcsb.org or radiocauseway.org. You can also like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Thanks for joining us.
Special thanks to Dr. Frank Cavanaugh of Final Exit Network for speaking with us today. Our theme music was produced by Forrest Seguin. Next week, we'll be back in studio with Dr. David A. Cleveland, who will be discussing his new article on the localization of food consumption. Thanks for listening.
Be well.
This program is a presentation of KCSB Public Affairs. The opinions expressed were those of the individual speakers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of KCSB, the Associated Students, or the Regents of the University of California.
If you have a comment or wish to respond, please address correspondence to KCSB University Center, Room 3185A, University of California, Santa Barbara, California, 93106. This is KCSB 91.9 FM, Santa Barbara.